Welcome to another very, very exciting edition of Porky Vision via the Two Mics on the Record podcast.
Indeed.
Now, Porky Vision was something that we used to do an awful lot on a radio station.
You bet.
But now we do it here. Mm. And so if you want to listen to Porky Vision, you want to tell other people where to get the best TV review, you send them to the On the Record podcast
division
of the Two Mics.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, you can get it on Audio Boom.
Yeah.
You can get it on Acast.
Excellent.
You can get it all over the place.
Love
iTunes.
It.
All
love
sorts
it.
Of places.
Absolutely love it. Well, let me tell you what I'm going to start with, okay?
Yeah, go on.
Now, over the last week or so, couple of weeks or something, you've been jousting again with Gary Lineker, have you not?
No, I haven't.
No?
I've been taking the mickey out of Gary Lineker.
How
Gary Lineker blocked me a long time ago.
Right,
so he's not actually able to have a go at me.
Yes.
And I'm not able to see what he tweets out.
Right.
However, lots of other people have been having a go at him ever since he decided unilaterally to tell everybody how much he was in favour of a second referendum.
Yes, that's right.
You know, because he doesn't think it's fair that we're leaving the European Union.
Absolutely. Anyway, so I'm watching the Right Show, okay?
The Right Stuff.
Yeah, the Right Stuff, but it's not the Right Stuff anymore, because Matthew Wright's not there anymore.
No.
Young lady, very...
Yeah, is it Claudia, our friend Claudia,
No, it wasn't, actually. No, it was some other young lady whose name I didn't catch.
Kirsty Gallagher's been doing it a bit as well.
Kirsty Gallagher's been doing a bit as well. But anyway, the quality of people they have, and the question asked was, does Gary Lineker have the right to express a political opinion or not, as he is, A, funded by the taxpayer, B, works for the BBC, whose code is impartiality.
Indeed. Well, you wouldn't get Hugh Edwards opening up the 10 o'clock news with, look, I'll tell you what it's about.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what you want
to
do.
Let's get out
you
of Europe.
You want to get down to Europe or maybe have a second
let's
referendum.
Let's get in Europe.
Let's get in it.
Yes, that's right, absolutely.
He can't do that, can he?
So anyway, so the Right Show is...
The Right Stuff.
The Right Stuff, thank you. Yeah, the Right Stuff.
This is the Right Show.
This is the Right Show, yeah, it's the Right Stuff. So they have people of fantastic intellect who are assessing this question, like, for instance, Josh Peterson.
Who
is the star of Made in Chelsea.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Josh Peterson. Yeah, I wasn't sure which one you meant.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Jesus
Is that,
Christ.
Is that some sort of highbrow show, is it?
Not that I'm aware of, no. Yeah. I've never actually seen it. I think it's like Love Island for nitwits.
Well, actually, funny you should say that, because another panellist was A.L. Booker, former Love Islander.
There you go. I mean, last
former
time...
Love Islander,
Remember the last time the Love Islanders discussed Brexit?
Yes.
One of them said, oh, does that mean that we won't have any cheese anymore?
Yeah, what's that then?
Fucking
what's
idiots.
That then? And, of course, Maggie Alfonsi.
Who's that?
You know Maggie?
Maggie, no.
Yeah, she's a former English female rugby international.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Well, so, listen, what was your prop forward?
So we're upping...
Was she a scrum half? What?
We are upping the, you know, the, so the political so far, contact here.
So far, you've got an IQ collectively of about 60.
That's a bit harsh to say that, but I mean, I don't know if any of these people are bright or dim.
No,
All I know is... All I know is I don't believe they've had great experience in assessing political situations over the years, like you and I probably have.
So what did they have to say about Mr. Lineker then?
Well, they were all on his side, of course.
Of course.
Of course they're all on his side.
Well, they're all lovies, aren't they?
He's a snowflake generation. He's like a bloke who wishes he was 20 years younger,
I'm going to tell you something that's going to shock you.
Go
mate.
On.
Now,
go on.
I overheard a conversation the other day between two, you know, what you might call millennials, right?
yeah.
And somebody was talking about...
Would this be in some sort of radio station you work at?
I couldn't possibly say that, but it was in a situation in which I was.
Yes.
And one of them said, you know, these MPs that are going abroad, the ones that voted for Brexit, I hope they're not in Europe.
Yeah.
And the other one said, yes, that's right, they should be banned from going to Europe because they voted to get out of the European Union.
Absolutely brilliant.
I mean, what a load of bollocks.
Absolutely brilliant.
Hey?
Nigel Lawson, the former Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Yes, he lives in France.
Lives in France, absolutely right. John Snow, on one occasion, said, oh, I see Nigel Lawson's expressing his views about, you know, leaving Europe from his holiday home in France. How ironic.
Yeah, yeah. Your mate.
Yeah, his son Dominic Lawson, in his column in the Sunday Telegraph, pointed out the following day, my father doesn't have a holiday home in France.
No.
That's where he lives.
Exactly.
And he can live there as long as he wants and whenever he wants and still have a political opinion about whether he should be in
and
or out.
And he's also, I believe, applied for French citizenship now.
Oh, is he right?
Because I think he quite fancies the idea of being able to have dual citizenship when Brexit happens.
Well, I've got nothing against the French. I think the French are great. Now, the one other woman on this panel of four...
Somebody else was there.
Yeah, Yasmin Albi Brown.
Oh, I know her.
Now,
yeah.
Have you had her on your show?
I've never had her on my show. And you know what? I would never have her on my fucking show.
Why is that?
Yasmin Albi
come
Brown.
On, come on. Don't get too worked up.
Well, no, because I don't like these liberals, right? I don't like them. Yeah. I don't have to put them on
the
show.
Well, they deserved a point of view, aren't they?
Yeah, but she's a journalist, right? This is a woman who wrote for The Independent.
Yes.
Right? Funnily enough, I was at a party at which she was attending.
Okay.
And she actually made a speech at this party. It was actually a party for Remainers.
Right, okay.
I found myself there under false pretenses. I was invited there, not because I'm a big Brexiteer.
So you found yourself in the opposite camp.
Well, I'm not a big Brexiteer, but I happen to believe that if you vote for something, you do it.
And you've had a vote, and it says get out,
that's what we should do.
Yeah.
She stood there and basically said that she was not going to stop campaigning to stay in Europe for as long as she had breath left in her body.
Right, okay.
And she's absolutely convinced that if these people like her, Alistair Campbell, all the rest of them, Tony Blair, if they all keep the campaign going, they'll eventually win.
All these scare stories, you know, because I read the property journals as well, because I do have a small investment in property and all that.
Yeah, how many houses have you got?
No, I'm not going into that. But do you know around King's Cross Station, they said, you know, we've got loads of development around there, regenerate the area, but after Brexit, it will collapse. Except for the fact
rubbish.
That internationally huge companies like Amazon are moving their people into London in huge blocks
well,
of
do you know,
offices.
If you go around the
huge
back,
blocks.
If you go around the back of King's Cross Station, which is now beautifully put together, St Pancras is there as well. Yeah. You know, it's an amazing sort of, you know, station to travel from.
That's right,
The Guardian have got an office back up there.
Yeah.
It's a whole media village. There's the Google are there.
Yeah.
YouTube are there.
That's right, that's what I'm saying. They're all there.
They're all going to fucking pull out.
And everybody said, oh, well, no, they'll all move out and go into Europe. They don't understand. 92% of all the financial business that happens in Europe and possibly in Europe and Asia happens in the city of London.
Yeah.
The only other major financial centre in this world is New York.
Yeah.
Everybody will say, oh, what about Singapore and all that? Singapore is a trading desk.
Exactly.
It is not a stock
same
market.
Same as Hong Kong.
Same as Hong Kong. That's absolutely right.
I mean, Hong
right.
Kong's got their own markets and everything, but they're nowhere near as big as London.
No, of course they're not. They're nowhere near. And as for Frankfurt, Frankfurt compared to London is about 2%.
Exactly.
It's ludicrous.
Yeah, forget about it.
They don't have the infrastructure.
Also,
now,
as you've often said, and you know I don't always back you up and agree with you, but as you've often said, you know, the language of commerce is English, right?
Of course it is.
Now, why would you suddenly centre yourself in a place where English is not the common language?
I mean, the two biggest stock markets in the world, London and New York, why then would you say, let's take everything to China?
Exactly.
Ah, we think we shall be trading in China.
Hey, by the way, did you see old Jeremy Hunt's fuck up? He goes to China, as a kind of trade delegate, and he's the new foreign secretary, He's got a Chinese wife, right?
Oh, right.
Which I didn't know, to be honest.
I didn't know.
And he's got Chinese, you know, kids who are half Chinese, right? But he walks into this meeting.
I suppose there would be, if he and his wife procreated children, and he's English and she's Chinese, they would be half Chinese.
They might have been from a previous marriage.
Well,
you don't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have adopted them from Russia, like Elton John did. You know,
that's right,
Anyway,
yeah.
so he goes into this room with all these, you know, delegates, high-powered trade government delegates from China.
Yeah.
And
he
says, oh, you know, my wife is Japanese.
Mm.
He said, she's Japanese.
Well, he claimed his wife was Japanese.
Yeah, but he got it wrong.
He forgot that she was Chinese.
Well, he got it somehow wrong. And
that's like you saying about your first wife.
Yeah.
Of course, my first wife was Canadian.
Was Canadian.
No, actually, she's American. Yeah.
So he's massively offended them all, of course, because they all now think he's done it deliberately to fucking screw up the trade deal.
I've just found a bit of information on information device to back up what you said. The rise of telecoms, media and technology companies flocking to set up in London has enabled British property sector to exceed expectations since the Brexit vote to quit the European Union, according to LaSalle Investment, the leading real estate investment manager in Europe.
Yeah, there you go.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, I mean, the other thing is, right, really seriously think that Mercedes, Audi, Volkswagen, and any number of other BMW are going to not sell any cars to Britain anymore.
We're their biggest market in Europe.
Of course we are.
You know, we're the fifth biggest economy in the world.
I know about your hairdresser's car, right, which I unfairly call it. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you do not see a traffic jam without Mercedes cars in it. I mean, like every third car in this country is a Mercedes.
I have always wondered how many Mercedes cars are there on the road in the world.
Yeah.
They must by a mile be the most popular model.
I think so, yeah.
And do you know the other thing?
Because you know why? Because what they've done cleverly, I think, Mercedes, is that a new A-class car, which is a sort of, you know, slightly boy racerish type car. You know?
That's not the one that failed the test, was it?
No, no, no. This is
that was an A-class, I'm sure it was.
Was it? I don't know.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that. But these are the kind of little hatchback cars.
Yeah.
It looks like like a Volkswagen Golf, kind of, you know.
Yeah, okay.
You know the one. But, I mean, it's a massively successful launch of a car.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Because it's the kind of car that ordinary people could afford to buy. Yeah. And they could go, I've got a Mercedes. And that's what they've done.
Sure, but... Remember, I think it was the A, right? And they had to redesign the whole thing.
Well, maybe it was the old A you're talking about.
It was the old A. And you know what the Elk trial is, don't you? The Elk...
The Elk trial?
The Elk test.
Elk test? Well, you were to run over an elk.
No. The whole idea is not to run over an elk.
No.
And so what happens is, to sell in Scandinavia, where Mercedes are very popular, they have to drive this car around...
I thought everyone drove a Volvo in the street.
No, Mercedes trying to break into Scandinavia. No. And, in fact, funnily enough, companies like Volvo did them by not warning them about the elk test.
Ah.
And the elk test is that when you're driving along at 60 miles an hour and an elk jumps on the road,
you
have to swerve to avoid the elk.
Right.
But what happened with Mercedes was they built the roof too high on the car, and every time they swerved, the car went over.
Oh, Christ.
It tipped over sideways.
Bloody hell.
Failed the elk test.
That's
okay?
Not good.
Now, I'm going to throw a question at you, which is going to put you on the spot.
All right.
Yasmin Alibi Brown in this programme said, well, if everybody's criticising Gary Lineker as a BBC employee for taking a political position, and in fact, I think Jacob Rees-Mogg has demanded the BBC dismiss him for this reason. She then put this point of view forward, which I'm still struggling to cope with, but you have a superior intellect to me, so answer this one.
Flattery will get you nowhere.
Answer this one.
Go on.
The former editor of the Sunday Times, Neil,
Andrew,
our pal Neil, Andrew Neil, Mr. Neil, Andrew Neil, right?
Yeah.
Regularly tweets out and advises people to support Brexit and Brexiteers.
Uh-huh.
He, however, does a political programme on the BBC and therefore has a vested interest in his programme married to his tweets. What the defenders of Lineker say is, but Gary Lineker reports on football, not politics.
Yeah.
Therefore, his tweets do not have a vested interest in his broadcasting.
Yeah, but don't forget...
How do we answer this
one? Well, don't forget that Gary Lineker doesn't just do football, right? He is seen by BBC Sport, particularly, as their kind of golden boy.
But he is sport, isn't he?
He is. He's done golf, hasn't he? He fronted the Olympics coverage.
Excuse me, he did golf 1 year only.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't quite work
out. Well, no, because he's not that
clever. And funny enough, I was around at the Open Golf where he did it.
Oh, yeah.
And... Even he, I think, felt very uncomfortable trying to anchor the Open.
He's not
you
as
know?
Bad as that bloke John, what's his face, who does the tennis, who's always offending everyone.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah, who calls women tennis players not such a good looker and all that kind of stuff. That's a
but
bit harsh, isn't it?
Yeah, but I can't believe he's still got a job, but he has.
No, but
Lineker also fronted the Olympics coverage. Now, you could argue the Olympics coverage is not simply a sporting deal, right?
Mm.
It is actually a very, very high profile and massively kind of, you know,
corrupt organisation.
Well, no, news. Well, not the Olympic. Well, the Olympic Committee's not that corrupt. I mean, you're talking about FIFA, right? I would say, and I've never, and I would challenge.
I know there's been allegations in the past about the Olympic setup.
Yeah, the old brown envelope brigade. But FIFA overpowers it, really. Does it? What about? I mean, we haven't talked about Qatar, but that's another story. Here's the thing. I would say that I have not. I mean, I follow Andrew Neil on Twitter, and he's very matter of fact, and he's very funny actually on Twitter. He rouses with people quite a bit.
Yeah.
I've never seen him outwardly offering a Brexiteer point of view.
Right.
Really. I've seen him saying things.
So you think that you think Yasmin Alibi Brown has misrepresented him on this?
I would say so. Because I mean, that's what
the other day.
Don't forget, that's what these people do.
Yeah,
I mean, these are the same people who are telling you that there's going to be some kind of super gonorrhea going around.
Yes, that's right.
After Brexit, well, how the fuck do they know?
Yeah, yeah.
And where's it coming from?
By the way, I've got a story I'm going to tell you about later, in which Jorex, the people who make condoms,
do they still make them?
Yeah, they still make them. Right. Yeah, they're thinking of charging £100 a Jorex.
Right.
Well, at the moment, they say they're far too cheap.
Really?
A sexual experience, which only costs like £3.25, is not a real sexual experience.
Well, and why would you pay 100 quid for a condom?
Well, they're applying to the...
You'd have to attach a woman to it, wouldn't you?
No. It's a bit harsh.
You'd have to have a woman as well.
They're applying to the European authorities to say we wish to increase the price of our condoms from £3.25 to £100.
That's bollocks.
Because... it will make people enjoy their sexual experience more if it costs more.
Well, that's rubbish.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, how about they go from £3 to £6 rather than £100? Well, where do you get £100 from?
No, they say they want to charge £100. Now, talking about condoms and Andrew Neil, and we mustn't put those in the same breath, but Andrew Neil, of course, was one of the two Fleet Street editors who had a dalliance with an extremely exotic
young Pamela Bordes.
Pamela Bordes is exactly the name.
Was the other one not Donald Trelford?
Donald Trelford.
Yeah, was editor at the time of The Observer. So they were kind of dueling editors,
That's
so
right.
So she was shagging at the same time.
She shagged them both.
The editor of The Sunday Times and the editor of The Observer.
That's right.
That's pretty good going.
It's pretty good going and playing one off against the other. Yeah. Donald Trelford fancied himself as a bit of a snooker expert.
He was a right wanker, wasn't he?
Oh, complete tosser. He was only about 4 foot 11 as well.
He was also, was he not the guy that gave up the source in the old helicopter scandal, you know, the thing that Michael Heseltine was involved in.
Did he? The company
Westlands.
Down in the West Country, Westland.
The Observer ran a big piece, right, about, you know, how the civil services stitched everybody up.
That's right,
and there was some kind of corrupt story going on. It was a great story.
Yeah.
But the source was a civil servant inside the Ministry of Defence.
Oh, that's right. And he shopped
and
her.
And he fucking shopped her and she went to prison.
Was it her or was it Guardian who shopped her?
No, I think it was Trelford.
She went to prison because she leaked the secret documents.
Yeah.
But anyway, can you imagine the scene in London at Annabelle's? Mm. I mean, Annabelle's has now been
Is it still going?
Well, it's just been relaunched with a £100 million refit, and it's now...
Maybe we should go.
Yeah, maybe we should go. Yeah, we should get an invite. Yeah. But in those days, it was the sort of place where George Best would go and all this kind of stuff.
Good friend Ross Benson used to go.
Used to go with George Best all the time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Good old Ross, you know, may you rest in peace.
Johnny Conte could be found there.
Johnny Conte, definitely. Johnny Conte walked in one night after he'd won the World Light Heavyweight Championship 2 days before, and they put the lights up, and everybody stood up and applauded him with his blonde girlfriend, I think her name was Vanessa.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely girl. Yeah, went to see them in Hertfordshire, where he lived, in Watford. Mm. Anyway, point of my story is...
Yes.
So what happened is... Of course, Sunday newspaper editors have fuck all to do most of the time, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So they spend most nights, like Tuesday, Wednesday, because they don't go to work on Monday.
Yeah, they just go for dinner, don't they?
Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, they spend in London at dinner and then go on to Annabelle's afterwards.
Right.
So you've got this dreadful scene of Andrew Neil arriving in his chauffeur driven drag, Donald Trelford in his chauffeur driven drag. Whose car will Pamela be in? Pamela be in tonight? You know
how embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they not know though that each other was?
I think they might have done.
Yeah,
I think they might have done. But I mean, she was a right little minx.
Well, she did not. Did she not cut out all the crutches of Andrew Neil's trousers?
She did.
Of all of his suits.
Yeah, she did.
He came home one day.
Yeah,
and she'd been in the house, taken the scissors. Cut the crotch out of every single
and cut the sleeves
of
off his shirt and all that.
She
kind
was also
of stuff,
shagging
you know?
A few MPs as well.
Oh, she was shagging an awful lot of people. And anyway, so we said. Sent somebody off on the trail of Pamela when this scandal erupted, and it was almost like, you know, a sort of how many people is she sleeping with? Is she trading secrets and all that kind of stuff?
She ended up being found somewhere in the fucking Far East.
Oh, no, I'm about to tell you.
Yeah.
About to tell you. So the whole of Fleet Street went after her, a bit like going after Blackie the Donkey.
I think Tim Miles was involved.
I think Tim Miles might have been involved.
Yeah, for the Mail.
And they eventually got to, I think it was the Philippines or Malaysia, something like that.
Yeah.
They get on the same plane as Pamela.
Right.
They come up to her and explain who they are.
Yeah.
And their response was, "Why don't you all go and play with your mother's vaginas?" That was her ladylike response. Honestly,
shocking.
It was so shocking.
Yeah.
Our guy, he was out there, Paul Thompson.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, "I've never been so shocked."
Really?
You know, this petite, beautiful woman sitting there, and we explained very nicely why we had to speak to her. She just exploded with all this filth.
Shocking.
And by the way, the version I've given you of it is a very clean version of what she actually said.
Right.
You know what I mean?
She didn't actually use that word.
Yeah. She didn't use the word play. She didn't use the word vagina. You know what I mean?
Right.
And after that, she just ran around the world trying to avoid everybody until we got fed up trying to chase her, and then disappeared.
Amazing. Oh, I wonder where she is now.
I don't know. But the one thing she did reveal, much to Neil's chagrin, was that each morning he asked her to, with her long, slender fingers, lotion into his head.
The hairy store. Oh, right,
It was a hairy store, a very expensive hairy store, which he had imported from somewhere like Nairobi or something, because it was made from African, you know, seed pods or
distilled
something like that.
Distilled through leopard skin or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So here we are, halfway through Porky Vision.
Yeah, Porky Vision, yeah.
To be fair,
now let's get down to a bit of Porky Vision.
I know you started off with the right stuff, but it seems to vary away from the actual TV stuff. I thought you were going to tell me there was a documentary about Pamela Bordes coming
out. No, but there are all sorts of tributaries to what we do in Porky Vision.
Do you know what I think I'm right in saying? You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm.
Was it not the end of Poldark most
recently
this week?
Well, I'm about to tell you about it. It's the most tragic thing I've ever come across.
Because you know what happened to me?
Yeah.
I came back, and it was for the last Sunday, a few days ago.
Yeah.
Of the July month.
Oh yeah,
And it'd been very windy. And I put my TV on Sunday night, Got home about 10-ish, thought, no, 9-ish it must have been, put the TV on, no signal. And I thought, oh, this is great. You know, there's something wrong. Somebody's
sorry, where was this?
In my place in London.
In London?
Because I've got Freeview.
I couldn't
get a signal. Couldn't get any
now,
TV stations
hang on,
at all.
Let me just go, because all in all my places where I live, it comes in through a cable from a box fixed to the wall below the TV.
Yeah.
Is that not yours?
Yeah. No, mine comes in. One of the problems I have is that I don't have cable TV.
Right.
Because I haven't cabled the street.
So is there a satellite on the top of your building?
No.
Oh.
There isn't.
So what is it?
And you're not allowed to put satellites on the building because it's one of those buildings you can't put it on.
Okay.
However, so I decided I'm not going to bother getting Sky. I'm just going to get Freeview.
Right.
So what
That's
there
fine.
Is, there should be a little aerial socket in the wall.
Right.
But unfortunately, the plank who put the furniture together in this place has put a massive great bookcase against it. So you'd have to take that out.
Complete idiot.
In order to try and find the thing.
Complete
so
idiot. Yeah.
Instead, I've got what's called a booster box.
Okay.
So I get pretty good Freeview.
So it works most of the time.
So it works all the time until today. Until the day that I came home.
Yeah,
Until this particular day. And there's no signal. Luckily, though, being smarter than the average bear, I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll retune it. And I retuned it.
Did
and
you?
Miraculously, it worked, right?
Good girl, wouldn't have done that.
But the worst thing that happened...
My telly would have blown up
but the worst thing that happened was it retuned itself and immediately fucking Pole Dark came on.
Yeah.
And I hate Pole Dark.
Oh, no.
So I had to watch it for about 4 minutes.
No,
and guess
no.
what? The bloke was lying in bed with his shirt off.
Yeah.
You know, with his arm around some woman.
That's right.
And I don't know who the woman was.
Well, it's brilliant because what happened was Pole Dark went off... at the very start of all the Pole Dark stuff, he goes off to the American War of Independence to try and stop America taking over. We lost that war, obviously, but he had to do that because he got drunk and beaten up an officer in the army.
Right.
And this was his penalty, you know, you'll go off and serve 2 years in the colony, know what I mean? So he goes
So
off
did
there.
All that happen during this particular series? Then?
No, this happened before the series.
Oh, okay.
And then when all that's over, he comes back and then inherits his father's bankrupt tin mines, you see what I mean?
Yes, okay.
And that's when he starts looking after Cornwall. Anyway,
well, that's about 3 series ago, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 3 series ago. But his first girlfriend in it was Elizabeth.
Mm.
And she got a bit of a horse face, actually.
Horse
you know,
face?
Yeah, a bit long face.
It's
a bit like
nice.
Princess Anne, to be honest.
Why the long face?
Eh?
Why the long face?
Well, she's just like physically. Do you know one time I worked on a newspaper and Princess Anne had done something, you know, wrong.
Yeah.
I think she told our reporter to naff off.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I remember that story. Yeah,
when she galloped out of, is it Gatcombe Park she lives
Gatcombe
in?
Park, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Naff off.
Yeah.
And so what
the horrible
editor,
little oik.
Eh?
You horrible little oik.
That's right, yeah. So what the editor did the next day in revenge, it's rather cruel because I don't believe that you should ever try and humiliate a woman.
Yeah.
We put a picture of Princess Anne and Shergar alongside each
that's
other.
That's not very nice.
And said, which of these two would you rather had disappeared? I mean, you know,
it's terrible.
It is.
What
it is.
Paper was that?
Well, I can't go into that.
Okay.
I don't want to go into that. You
well,
know,
I'll tell you what, I covered her when she was having marital trouble with old Fogg. You know,
oh,
Mark
Foggy,
Phillips,
that's right, yeah.
And we all got sent
He was known as Foggy because he was said to be by his army mates thick and wet.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we were sent down to Puerto Rico.
Oh, right.
And which is where they were having, bizarrely, everything has a sort of synergy here, an International Olympic Committee meeting. She was on the International Olympic Committee.
Yeah, because
No, she was.
Oh,
not him.
Oh, she won a gold medal.
No, she was on it,
That's right,
And it was in this hotel in Puerto Rico, right?
Right.
And we got down there, and amazingly, one of those things that only a photographer could spot, she wasn't wearing a wedding ring.
Right.
And so that was a great story. You
Fantastico,
know, she's taking the wedding ring off, right?
Yeah,
But the funniest thing about the whole story, there were two funny things. Mike McDonough, our former mate, right, who was a massive recovering alcoholic, he fucking turns up, right, and he'd come in from Florida. We'd all come from New York.
Yeah.
And it was George Gordon and me,
Phil Finn,
and McDonough's there.
Yeah.
And as I walked out, after we just discovered that she wasn't wearing a wedding ring, he's walking into the hotel. I don't know, Mike, how you doing?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm in shock.
Mm.
I said, what do you mean you're in shock?
Yeah,
what's the matter with you?
Shock.
You know, he said, I've just seen Bobby Charlton. And he'd just seen Bobby Charlton wandering around, because he was there as well for some fucking Olympic thing.
Yeah,
I don't know what.
Yeah.
And he literally couldn't, he said, he's my hero.
Yeah, well, he was from Manchester.
Can't believe I've just noticed, I've just met Bobby Charlton and shook his hand.
Yeah.
I said, well, never mind that. Fucking, you know, Princess Anne's not wearing a wedding ring.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But then the other thing that happened was that Tim Miles was there. I think he must have come out, I don't know where he'd come out from, London or wherever. And that night, we were all in some bar, right?
Yeah.
And it was one of these hotels. Bars where you know everyone was there,
yeah, exactly,
right? And we're all standing at the bar drinking, smoking as you could in those days.
Yeah,
And he goes, oh, look, there's King Constantine of Greece. Right?
What was he fucking doing?
I don't know what he was doing there. He was fucking dancing with some woman, right? So Tim, in those days, used to carry a little sure shot camera.
Right, yeah.
You know, just in case you hadn't taken a picture.
Exactly,
Because we didn't want to drink with the monkeys.
No, exactly. So
they were all outside.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, so Tim says, yeah, watch this. So he goes over to fucking King Constantine dancing, starts taking his picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And King Constantine went fucking nuts because he was obviously dancing with someone.
Didn't have any security like
no,
people,
he didn't
with
seem
it.
To. No.
Well, it's not much of a kingdom, is it, Greece?
And he sort of moved towards Tim and tried to grab the thing off, tried to grab the camera.
Yeah.
And then he grabs him by the lapels and goes, why don't you fuck off? And Tim went, good well, that's not very kingly of you.
Yeah.
He just walked off. It was one of those bizarre nights, you know. Yeah. We were pissing ourselves off.
Well, getting back to Princess Anne, of course, you know, because, you know, without being unkind, I've never been unkind.
No, of course
Princess
not.
Princess Anne...
Was that your idea to put her up with Shergar?
No, definitely not
sure?
me. No, I swear to you, I wouldn't do that. That's humiliating
and
all that. But, of course, because I was in charge of so many news organisations over the years, you put a picture together of Princess Anne and the royal correspondent who knew everything.
Yeah.
And apparently, and I can't say this is true, but apparently, you know, Princess Anne found Foggy a bit tiresome after a couple of years of marriage.
And what you mean, she didn't fancy him anymore?
Well, but she sort of took an attraction, apparently, to one of her bodyguards.
Oh,
you know, there's a diplomatic, the Royal Diplomatic Squad.
Yeah, the Royal Protection.
Royal Protection Squad. And there's two, actually. There's the Royal Protection Squad who go to events with them with guns to make sure nobody kills them. But the other one is they have permanent armed guards who travel with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently one
those
of
those... are the guys in the suits, aren't they?
That's right, yeah. Apparently one of those, right, got very close to Princess Anne. And one scurrilous story that came from one particular...
You do know she's still alive,
right? Of course she's still alive, and
so
that's why this is
going
to be an alleged story. It is only an alleged story.
Of course.
But one royal correspondent told me that allegedly, you know, it was intimated that her and one of the bodyguards had been found on the back stairs of one of the royal residences in Frombie-style circumstances.
No.
You know what I mean?
Really?
Yes, yes, yes.
That's quite an allegation.
It's an allegation which I cannot possibly justify. I'm only telling you about a conversation. And I believe
on all fours.
I'm not going into it. I believe it to be completely untrue. It was on stairs, you see. And on stairs, of course, it's quite handy.
Well,
isn't
you're the expert. on the stairs
front. On the stairs front.
What was that story about that friend of ours who was married to... I think a photographer, was she
not?
Photographer? And I'm not going to get into the... Don't even mention any names.
No.
But she was like a music journalist.
Music journalist.
And he came home one day.
Right.
One afternoon. And they both worked for different Fleet Street papers,
right,
I think.
Right, okay, yeah.
Only to... I opened the front door... only to find two members of Status Quo at either end of her on the floor. Right?
Do you know what?
Do you remember that story? Don't say the name.
No.
She's still around.
The same story. And it might be the same story. But the person who told me the story, when I said, my God, I said, and what was her husband's reaction? The bloke who told me the story said, he was very shocked. Well, I think you would be, wouldn't you?
Well, I would have thought so.
Yeah.
Is that Francis Rossi?
Yeah.
Hello.
Anyway, we've got to go back to Poldark, because what happened is his first girlfriend, Elizabeth, right?
Yeah.
When he came back to the American War, found out that she had been squired by the local villain.
Squired?
Yeah, called George Warleggan.
Oh, I know him,
But George Warleggan got very rich. I mean, he's a winner.
He's not much of a villain, though, is he? I mean, he doesn't look the part to me. He looks like a kind of a bit of a twat.
He was everything.
Honest.
He was a magistrate, he was an MP and all that, used to hang people for stealing bread and all that kind of stuff.
He doesn't exude sort of villainy or power, does he?
Well, yeah, but he accumulated an awful lot of money and wealth. Yeah. You know, while Ross Poldark was going around being the fucking Minister for Social Security, I wanted to give all the fucking peasants loads of money, which they didn't have in Cornwall, you know what I mean? Old George was getting on with it and creating a decent economy in Cornwall, you know.
Right.
But anyway, what happens is, you see, and this is so interesting, when Ross Poldark, two series ago, finds out that Elizabeth is going to marry George Warleggan, he goes over to her house, knowing that George is up in London, and gives her a right good scene to her, okay?
Okay.
You know, in the sort of...
In traditional sense.
In the vernacular of the Cornish dialogue, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So she then ends up pregnant and thinks, oh, I tell you what, so as not to be found out, I'll tell George I want another really good sing to for about a week. You know what I mean? Because she was
for
already,
a week.
Yeah, for a week because she was already pregnant by Ross Poldark.
Okay,
and she needed to get, you know, to mask the pregnancy.
Okay, right.
Right. So anyway, what happens is.
Which series did this happen in?
In about the second series.
Right. Well, why are you telling me this now?
Well, because it's all relevant to what all relevant to what happened in the last episode of this series.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, what happened was she had a baby on an 8-month pregnancy. Do you understand?
What, a month early?
Yes.
Oh, because, it wasn't actually a month early.
It was a month early. Oh. But of course, what she did is she pretended to fall down the stairs, right?
Yeah.
And then, oh, take me to the doctor, take me to the doctor. Oh, the baby's arrived.
Yeah.
And so it was called the 8-month pregnancy. In fact, it was a 9-month pregnancy, but she had been rogerized by Ross Baldock a month earlier.
So she not declared herself to be pregnant until a month after the
event. Anyway, George has been suspicious ever since, but ever since she's got Ross's mate, who is a doctor, to say, oh, no. Some women do have 8-month pregnancies, don't they? Anyway, she suddenly finds herself pregnant again in this series.
And the baby's quite healthy, presumably.
Baby's a body bouncing boy, now a teenager, you know, something like that.
Right.
So then she gets pregnant again. Mm. So
who's she with at this point?
George Wollegin, her husband. Yeah. Okay. But George, of course, says, well, this will prove for once and for all, won't it, whether the first child is mine? Because all the rumour in all the village was, oh, Ross Poldark had been, you know... Yeah.
Well, from being, but who does it look like then?
Eh?
Who does the first baby look like?
Well, in Cornwall, there's a lot of, you know, one-eyed stuff and all that. You know what I mean? And all, in those days.
Not now, no.
No, not now.
It's very much the sort of
absolutely.
The playground of the rich
elite,
and famous,
elite and all that kind of stuff. So...
You can rent old, what's his name's house, can't you? Gordon Ramsay's house for $7,000 a week.
Yeah, you can, that's right. It's not bad, it's $7,000 a week.
$7,000 a week.
So what happens is, she decides, you know, as George Wing said, for once and for all, I will know now the true, you know, parentage of my first son, who he's always been suspicious of. And in fact, you know, did things like sending away to boarding school all the time, so he didn't have to look at him every morning and see Ross Poldark's face in his face, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And all that kind of stuff.
And presumably Ross Poldark doesn't claim to be the father.
Ross Poldark knows he is the father.
Does he know that he is?
Oh, he knows he's the father. There's been a few touching scenes along the way in which he's been to see the boy and stroked his cheek, you know, with his hand and all that kind of stuff. You know, so anyway, she then decides that if she doesn't have an 8-month baby this time, the secret will be up.
Well, why does she not just shag them both at the same time? I mean, I don't mean together.
Well,
but,
because they're not always around at the same time. Well, you know, one of them's in London, they're both MPs now.
But she doesn't have to wait a month, is what I'm saying.
Well, anyway, what she does is she goes to the good doctor, you know, who is a mate of Ross's. Yeah. Ross went, in fact, and rescued him from a French jail.
Right.
But the doctor was so fucking, you know, socially-minded. I'm not leaving this jail, Ross, even though you've blown a hole in the wall because of all these prisoners
all
I have to look after.
Anyway.
In the end, they dragged him out, you know, because, I mean, all the bloody soldiers who would die, we're all press gang wankers anyway, you know what I mean? So it wasn't anything worth that.
No, of course.
So anyway, what happens here is that she gets a drug from the doctor to induce the birth at 8 months.
Oh, dear.
But guess what?
What?
It kills her.
It kills her?
It kills her.
Blimey.
It kills her.
Isn't it tragic?
Too strong a drug.
What, you mean in this particular episode?
In the last episode of the current series. Just in case anybody watching this has not watched it yet, well, don't watch it if you don't like grief, because it was very sad.
We may have to put a warning on the podcast.
Yeah,
you know,
spoiler
alert, you know?
It was very sad indeed.
Poldark spoiler alert.
Yeah, it was very sad indeed, and I'm afraid that is exactly what happened, you know?
Very sad for her career as well, because presumably, you know, once you've written out of a show... You know,
well, it was last episode.
Well, yeah, but they're not going to do another series.
Well, there will be other series and all
that's
that.
What I'm
she won't come back to life.
She's now done.
Yeah, no.
So unless they start doing like a flashback.
Yeah.
Is there any mystery as to why she's died, or you know that it's because of that drug?
It's because of the drug. She tried to induce the birth of her child to make out his 8-month baby.
And do you reckon then that the child was War Fagans or whatever his name is? What's his name?
Wollegin.
Wollegin. Was it his?
I think on this occasion it was, but she had to prove that she was an 8-month pregnancy mother, not a 9-month pregnancy mother. Now, the other program has really got my goat. You know how much I've railed against in the past? That bloody awful man, Ed Balls.
Yes.
Trying to be a clown.
Yeah, you don't like Ed Balls, do you?
Well, I thought he was a fucking clown when he was trying to run the Treasury. And
he wasn't very good at that.
No, because it ended up when eventually we got rid of Gordon Brown and his mad economic policies.
Well, except Gordon Brown moved upstairs.
Yeah, yeah. But he was still, you know, in charge of the economy and everything else, right?
Yeah.
As Prime Minister. And of course, when the first coalition government came in, there was a message left in the Treasury. Sorry, no money left. We spent it all.
Yes.
It was so crass. Right. And so
that was from that idiot Liam Byrne, wasn't it?
It was though? Liam Byrne, yeah. But, of course, his boss was Ed Balls.
Yes.
Right. So Ed Balls then realises he's the most crap politician in the world, the most incompetent economist that's ever come out of
Oxbridge. He lost his seat as well, didn't he?
He lost his seat. Yeah. Of course he did, because he's fucking useless.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, he then decides, I'll take another career plan. Mm. His wife, of course, is Yvette Cooper.
Yes.
She's still quite a successful politician.
Well, she's actually cleverer than he is.
Much cleverer than he is, yeah. So he went off and played the piano.
Right.
And then got into Strictly Comes Dancing.
That's right, I remember that.
Now, this is so undignified, right? A former First Secretary of the Treasury on Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely outrageous. Mm. Unbelievable that the man could have taken a senior officer of state and then wanted to be a clown. But guess what he's doing now?
What's he doing now?
Now, that's run out. He's now doing something called Travels in Trump Land with Ed Balls.
What, he's doing a TV show?
He's doing a TV show, traveling around America, and the whole point about it is to go around America, to small-town America, to prove how useless Donald Trump is,
So he goes into a little place in America where nobody knows who the fuck he is.
That's right, absolutely, yeah.
Working for the BBC, I presume, right?
That's right, absolutely.
Only the BBC can come up with this rubbish.
Absolutely. He then goes and says, oh, well, you know, of course, you know, Donald Trump's got it all wrong, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's gone to America's deep south to see why Trump voters like the president. What he found was that Trump had restored pride in the military and that people like his showman bluster and see it as akin to wrestling. He found a Mexican woman who swam the river from Mexico to enter America illegally because she wanted to live in the same country as Donald Trump.
Right.
And he's putting all
and
this down.
You know, he's the only guy that's surprised by any of that. And, you know, you and I know America. Of course they love Trump in America.
Of course they do,
You know, the snowflakes don't love him.
Yeah.
The people who live in California in the show business world don't love him.
Yeah.
But everybody else in the whole country thinks he's great.
Yeah. But guess
what? Have you seen the economy's booming, right?
Well,
unemployment has never been lower.
I was about to say to you, so this programme was recorded before the latest economic figures came out, showing that quarterly growth in America, 4.3%, under Trump's new policies to cut taxes and put more money back into people's pockets. They spend more, economy revives, right? He was the first Secretary of the Treasury in this country and was trying to bankrupt the country.
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody put the question to him? Well, Mr. Balls, as you're supposed to be an economist yourself and a Cambridge-educated man, what do you say about this man you're denigrating and maligning has actually got the American economy going in a way you couldn't even get...
Exactly.
You couldn't run a tuck shop and make it work because you charge too much tax on your Mars bar.
We were talking about this
because you
other
believe
day.
In spending other people's money.
We were doing this the other day. The Labour Party cannot run the economy. No. They never know how to. Look at the old the O2, which is now... Yep. A magnificent and fantastic venue, right?
Exactly.
One of the most profitable venues in the world for putting on bands.
That's
You know, U2, I saw them there.
That's right.
You know, people like the Rolling Stones have played there. Yep. You know, people go to the O2. It's constantly been... When the government owned it, when it was the Millennium Dome,
that's right.
They couldn't make it work.
Of course they couldn't.
Now it's an absolute money-making, barrel full
of
laughs.
Of course it is.
You know.
Of course it is.
I'll tell you what else I'm going to say about the BBC while we're on the subject.
Oh, yeah.
Is the thing I hated this week, earlier this week, all of Sunday afternoon was taken up by coverage, of fucking Ride London, right? Which
Ride
is this
London,
ridiculous bike race in the rain where you were literally looking through what looked like, you know, at the bottom of a glass.
That's right.
Because all the rain
like
was all over the lens.
Of a bottle, actually.
Bottom of a bottle.
Yeah.
What an absolute waste of taxpayers' money.
Complete.
Waste of licence payers' money.
And that was on mainline channels,
BBC,
BBC
One all afternoon.
That's right.
For hours.
Utter rubbish.
And all these tosses cycling around Box Hill.
Yeah.
Your
and
part
old,
of the world.
I'm delighted to say that old Khan, the mayor
Sadiq,
of London, Sadiq Khan, has now had a legal challenge put to him by Westminster Council, who said if you put any more fucking bike lanes in Westminster, not only will the economy just dry up, you are going to kill people with the pollution of cars stood still for 18 hours a day.
I know.
And they've gone to the High Court, made a legal challenge, and the legal challenge is in abeyance.
Good.
Brilliant.
Well, let's hope they're successful. That was Porky Vision. We are the 2 months. So she was shagging at the same time.
She shagged them both.
The Edge of the Sunday Times and the Edge of the Observer.
That's right.
That's pretty good going.
It's pretty good going, and playing one off against the other. Yeah. Donald Trelford fancied himself as a bit of a snooker expert.
He was a right waiter, wasn't he?
Oh, complete tosser. He was only about 4 foot 11 as well.
Was he not the guy that gave up the sauce in the old helicopter scandal? You know, the thing that Michael Heseltine was involved in.
Did he? The company Westlands. Down in the West Country, Westland.
The Observer ran a big piece, right, about, you know, how the civil services stitched everybody up.
That's right,
and there was some kind of corrupt story going on. It was a great story.
Yeah.
But the source was a civil servant inside the Ministry of Defence.
Oh, that's right. And he shopped
and
her.
And he fucking shopped her and she went to prison. She ended up being found somewhere in the fucking Far East.
Oh, no, I'm about to tell you.
Yeah.
About to tell you. So the whole of Fleet Street went after her, a bit like going after Blackie the Donkey.
I think Tim Miles was involved.
I think Tim Miles might have been involved.
Yeah, for the mayor.
And they eventually got to, I think it was the Philippines or Malaysia, something like that.
Yeah.
They get on the same plane as Pamela.
Right.
They come up to her and explain who they are.
Yeah.
And their response was, "Why don't you all go and play with your mother's vaginas?" That was her ladylike response. Honestly,
shocking.
It was so shocking.
Yeah.
Our guy, he was out there, Paul Thompson.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, "I've never been so shocked."
Really?
You know, this petite, beautiful woman sitting there, and we explained very nicely why we had to speak to her. She just exploded with all this filth.
Shocking.
And by the way, the version I've given you of it is a very clean version of what she actually said.
Right.
You know what I mean?
She didn't actually use that word.
Yeah, yeah. She didn't use the word play. She didn't use the word vagina. You know what I mean?
Right.
And after that, she just ran around the world trying to avoid everybody until we got fed up trying to chase her and then disappeared.
Amazing. That's quite an allegation.
It's an allegation which I cannot possibly justify. I'm only telling you about a conversation. And I believe
it seems
to be
on all fours.
I'm not going into it. I believe it to be completely untrue.